This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
You're listening to Out of Doors from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello and welcome. I'm Mark Stephen. Right now, I'm sitting on one of the most westerly points on the island of Mull. In front of me, there is a jetty. There are, three yachts moored up there at the moment, pleasure craft, a couple of tourist boats, another one out in the bay there. The sun is actually just setting directly in front of me, so the water looks as if it's just thousands of points of light. And just about 150, maybe 200 metres away, I can see on the island there a wee cafe called The Boathouse. That's on the island of Ulva. Now, Ulva's interesting because just over a year ago, it was bought out for the community.
It's great to see you all here on this wonderful day, and I'd just like to say welcome to the community-owned island of Ulva. Yeah. 10, 9, 8.
And the community consists of exactly 5 people.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Rebecca Munro is one of them.
I run the boathouse on the Isle of Ulva with my sister-in-law. And I'm also a director of the North West Mull Community Woodland Company and also the Ulva subcommittee, which runs day-to-day life on Ulva in charge of the repopulation and regeneration. Lots of titles.
Beautiful, beautiful day. Sun shining in the hills. Benmore across there. Just the patterns, the shadows of the clouds crossing it. Absolutely idyllic. But this is a tough gig, living in an island like this.
Yeah, it is. I mean, especially in the summer. People always say, you know, the winters must be tough, but actually the summer you have to work really, really hard for those 6 months to keep you going through the winter. So I think definitely winter's more of a time to recharge, but I think living here or on Mull or other communities like ours where tourism's the main economy, you do put in a hard shift to survive, really. Yeah.
Tell me your average day at the moment. When does it start? When does it finish?
On a good day, we'll start at 7. Some days, if we know it's going to be busy, it might be 5:30, 6. And we're not out of there before 6:30 at night. Some nights, if we've got crab and things to do, can be 8:30, 9 o'clock. So, I mean, doing a 14-hour day in here 6 days a week isn't unusual. So,
what on earth do you do at 5:30 in the morning?
We bake our own bread. So, you know, bake bread and make cakes and sometimes think, why? But, you know, yeah. You know, people like home cooking and we've built a name for ourselves on that, so we get along well in the winter.
Is there still only 5 of you on the island? Because, I mean, there's you, your husband, the 2 kids,
yeah.
And a chap called Barry.
Yeah, that's right. That's at the moment. Next month, we've actually got a new development manager starting and she's going to be moving to the island, so we're really excited about that. So once she's here, it'll be driving things forward again with housing renovations. Hopefully we'll start to be going out to tender for that. And then also the big house, our plans for that at the moment, we've got an application in for funding. We're looking to turn half of it into a cultural heritage centre, telling the story of the island through all of us people. So telling the history of it that way from the past, present, future, hopefully. And then the other half, we are hoping to turn into high-end self-catering. So that'll then help to fund the museum side. So the self-catering would also allow the opportunity for visitors to the island to stay and explore the island in more depth, stay for a week.
What was going through my head? Once upon a time, 835 people on this island lived and worked. 16 townships. I mean, that's astonishing.
Yeah, between Ulva and Gomatra, it was a huge amount of people. And obviously, then the kelp industry was booming. When you walk around today, you can still see the evidence of that. And one of the most amazing things I found exploring in the winter is you can see all the run rigs and where they farmed once the bracken's down in the winter, and it is the better land that they were using to support themselves. And obviously each little croft had its own area, and there's areas quite far off the paths here where you'll find a house or a few houses together. And I would love the ability to travel back in time and just to see it, because now you can see the ruins, but it's hard to imagine the numbers of people that were here, even when it was a place for stopping off, when you had the paddle steamers going out to Staffa. I just would have loved to see it like that, because it just would have been incredible, to that number of people.
The fact that so many people were cleared off here actually worked quite well in your favour a year ago, because one of those people was Macquarie, who went across to Australia and became a governor, became quite wealthy, and you got part of your funding anyway from the Macquarie Trust.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And quite a lot of money from the Macquarie Trust.
Yeah, so we got £500,000 from the Macquarie Group, which...
How much we asked for?
We just said to them, look, would this be something that you might consider helping out with? And they said, leave us with it. And then they came back and they said, would £500,000 be okay? And we were like, yeah.
Let me think. Yeah.
But they've been amazing. It's not just been, it's been the offer of other support from them. So looking at other companies they represent, looking at maybe renewable energies, for example, electric vehicles. So it wasn't even just that initial investment. It's been keeping in contact with them for help going forward. So it's been a really great relationship to have with them. And we 100%, without the crowdfunding donations from visitors and people all over the world and the Macquarie Group, we wouldn't have got over the line, because the land fund grant that we were given was incredible, but we still had to find the remainder of the money.
Over 4 million, but I mean, still, you've got to find the remainder of the money and do something with the land and the properties thereafter.
Yeah, exactly. We wouldn't be here without that. Yeah. So, yeah.
You must be fairly far advanced with plans now, but you know, the Scottish Government can give you some money, crowdfunding, some other money, Macquarie Group, some other money still, but that's capital costs, not really running costs.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to be able to invest to actually bring it back to, you know, to par. Basically.
Yeah, and that's part of what we're figuring out now is how we do that. So things obviously don't happen overnight and things are going to take a bit longer. So we're very keen to learn and take advice from other community groups. One of the things we said from the start is we didn't want to start off with a huge amount of debt that we had to pay back from the outset. So we didn't want to borrow in order to complete the purchase. And because of the Macquarie donation, we didn't have to do that. So I think from the start, you know, that was a benefit to us that initially we haven't started out with debt, because if you were already looking for tens of thousands of pounds every year to cover the debt for the purchase of the island, you know, that was really then difficult to be then investing in property and doing things we'll try and do. So I think we've been very lucky that we don't have an initial debt.
Rebecca Munro, proprietor of the Boathouse and the island of Ulva. Rory Munro is Rebecca's husband. What is it you do during the day?
I'm a fisherman, a prawn fisherman, so I fish around Ulva and the lochs.
And who do you sell to?
A lot of it goes to the Boathouse, which is quite nice. Pretty low food miles.
kind of flogging it to your wife.
Yeah, the rest of it goes to a buyer and it ends up in Spain and France and stuff like that.
How are plans progressing here?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, you always want things to happen a bit quicker, but when you're involved in it, you realise things take time. But it's just really exciting to be part of it.
What all do you have to do now that you didn't have to do before?
We're trying to make our own money. Things like opening up the Bothy, I take charge of that, which is in the south end of the island. And before that was closed to the public. So there's been hundreds of people going to that, which is quite nice to see.
On what basis? Do they rent it?
Yeah, they rent it self-catering, but it's just, it's kind of a fancy Bothy in the fact that it's got a shower that works off the wood burner. So it's quite nice. It's off-grid and everything, so it's just nice having other people coming to the island and getting the opportunity to stay a bit longer.
So you have to set up the Bothy for them every time they come?
Yeah, I volunteered. It's one of those things that you'll say you'll do, but it's making in a little bit of money. Hard work, but good to do.
So you've got to put firewood in there, cut the grass, that kind of thing?
I take firewood up in the quad bike or the boat, because it's on the coastline at the south end of the island, so it's quite hard to get to. You've seen what the roads are like.
Interesting. Colourful.
Yeah, so stuff like that. Just trying to do my part, really. If you love a place and you're passionate about it, you don't mind doing it. It's not a chore. I just quite enjoy doing it, to see the difference of the place. The garden in particular, I'm quite excited about the future of that, because before that it wasn't open to the public, and it's quite a grand garden actually. And when I grew up on the island, I never get the chance to go in myself because it was a private residence, so it's quite nice having people just to be able to walk in and see the different mature trees and shrubs and stuff.
So you lived on the island, but you never actually got to go into, were you ever in the house?
I was in the house a couple of times. It was always kind of a country house. It's not the type of place you go in, mm-hmm. pop round for a cup of tea or anything. Yeah. So.
When do you anticipate actually getting new bodies in here?
Hopefully by the end of next summer. I mean, we're trying to get everything put in place, but we're hoping the end of next summer. That's for the main residents. There's also the options of the campsite. We're going to advertise for a couple to maybe take that on and run it. So it's another business opportunity for someone.
Yeah. Must be quite exciting, this, though, because, I mean, all of a sudden you've got this... It's essentially a blank canvas, but there's lots of potential here.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there's been sceptics, of course, but most people that come here actually say, oh, wow, this is... You know, they see the vision. So there's definitely going to be hard times, but... I just think it's so exciting.
Rory Munro, Rebecca's husband.
I think it's the first island that's ever been bought within the terms of the land reform legislation. I know islands were bought previously. This gives an enormous opportunity for the local people now to begin the process of regeneration and potential repopulation. I know that's what they want to do, and that's what this really is intended for.
I'm John Addy. I'm one of the directors of the Woodland Company that bought the Isle of Over. It's a fantastic day. Why don't we just go up the hill in the company limousine?
Oh, I didn't realise there was such a thing.
It was a wreck that we inherited. It was left derelict.
What, this thing?
Aye. And
okay.
Rory Munro got it going, and it's actually proved invaluable.
Is this the only car on the island?
This is the only proper car, yeah.
Right, okay.
Ready?
Yep, absolutely.
Good idea.
No, it's a wreck of a thing, but it's actually very handy because it means we can get up onto the hill quickly and you get a different perspective.
Ah.
You may end up walking back, of course.
I used to have a car like that.
I don't remember you having much in the way of roads or tracks on the island.
There aren't. This is as good as it gets. That's a good question, actually, because we don't intend there to be lots of big roads or anything like that. You know, I think when people do move here, they're almost going to have to sign up, I think, to the infrastructure and transport policy.
Uh-huh. Which is there isn't any.
Which is there aren't going to be fancy roads, and you won't be able to have big four-wheel drive trucks and things like that. You know, we're thinking in terms of electric vehicles. You know,
uh-huh.
charged up with banks of batteries in sheds from solar power or small windmills or something like that. Golf buggy type things. You know,
uh-huh.
speed limited.
It's going to need to be a pretty robust golf buggy to come up this track.
Well, I mean, we'd hope to put slightly better surface on. But we'd keep the same width and
yeah.
Ambience, you know? It's all possible.
It's been just over a year since the company took ownership of the island. How are plans progressing?
Very well. It's been an extremely busy year. It's incredible what's been done in a year. The top priority, as you'll know from your last visit, is housing,
yeah.
and it's getting people living on the island again. And that's coming along rather well. All the existing houses have been surveyed, and we can get onto those straight away just under building warrant. We don't need planning permission to do any of that work, which is good. So as for new housing, there's a bit more work to be done because there's a strong presumption in the local plan against any new build on Over.
Why?
Because the island is split down the middle lengthways. The north side of it is countryside zone and the south side of it is special countryside zone. So in planner speak, that's a no-go for new housing, really. However, we've had some extremely helpful and constructive chats with the planners. They acknowledge that circumstances on Over have changed completely now. It's no longer a big house estate with buildings to support it. It's a community that needs to grow. So, at their suggestion, we're about to start to produce a master plan, a social and economic development master plan for the island. If that's accepted by the council, then that becomes the planning blueprint for the island. It's like a sort of micro local plan just for the island.
Yeah.
And with that under our belt, hopefully in a year or two's time, then we get the green light then for new build houses as well as the renovations. And as well also as we're just pausing for a minute at the Hill Steadings here, you know, just ripe for redevelopment.
I mean, these are basically farm buildings at the moment.
Yeah, and it'd be very useful for a farmer. In fact, we're proposing to get some calves this autumn, so we're ready for next year. We've put a big application in for an AACS grant, Agri-Environment and Climate Scheme grant. If we're successful in getting that, it's a five-year programme, starts next January. So we get the cattle in, mollycoddle them over the winter, probably in here, actually, and then get going next year. And then subsequently, that could be redeveloped, of course, into housing or into commercial units or something. So we've come out of the policy woodlands now, and we're out into the open ground. On the right is one of the broadleaf, native broadleaf plantations which the previous owners put in. They put three big blocks in for biodiversity and conservation purposes. They're doing quite well, which is very good. We're thinking about possibly putting a third similar sized block, perhaps, maybe as much as 60 hectares, at the far end of the island to add to that.
Rebecca was saying that this island is actually twice the size of Iona. I hadn't clocked that the last time I was here.
It's about 6 miles long by, a mile and a bit deep, north to south. It's a big, big island. You really get a sense of the scale when you from the sea, actually, when you look back at it. It's a big, big island. And I was stopped here. Better, isn't it?
Oh.
Horrible, that.
Considerably quieter.
It's quite funny, actually. When we're driving around in this thing, people walking quite often give us dirty looks, because quite rightly, too, because the last thing they expect on over is a horrible thing like that.
Rattling it, banging its way along the road.
Yeah. So we walk back just and climb up through the heather a bit here, and avoiding ticks. Oliver is bad for ticks, there's no doubt about it. Probably because the sheep have been off for a good few years now, so you know they were always treated, of course, and there's an awful lot of deer.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about, because I just saw prints back there in the mud. What's your deer population like?
Well, the sales particulars, when they put it on the market, said that there was a herd of 400 or so. They describe it as a well-managed herd of 400. But actually, if you do the sums, for the amount of available deer run, and to allow some regeneration to occur, you really need about 70 or 80 maximum.
So not that well managed.
No, then. So we brought in a contractor to sort of get the deer numbers down very professionally last season. He took off 120 deer, and the national helicopter count just a couple of months ago found there are still 320 here. Oh. And they were physically counted 320 on the island. So whilst we thought originally that we would get them down to a sensible number and then that would be it. In fact, I think we're going to end up with a pretty sustainable venison business, because as we get the numbers down, the reproductive rate will increase. The quality of the carcasses will improve as well, because towards the back end of last year, they were looking pretty ropey.
Why didn't you let the shooting?
Well, we had a lot of chat about that in the company. Some were in favour of it because it would bring in a few thousand pounds. But the general feeling was that this is not what we're about.
You don't want to be a sporting estate.
We're not about that. No, we're not at all. And we're very happy to be selling venison, and it's really good quality stuff. But no, we just didn't want that on the island. It was just against the sort of the general ethos, really, I think. You know, there's no keepering on Ulver. There's no Muirburn for grouse shooting.
Tell you something else there isn't. Any noise. I can just about hear birdsong in the distance. You see Ben Moore crossing Mull there. There's this red track, slightly muddy, rocks at the side of it, foxgloves, lots of bracken, and then one tree. Is that an eagle up there?
Looks like it, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah. With perfect timing. Perfect timing. Yeah. A golden eagle has just flown across us.
Yeah, it is. So on the agricultural side, there's managing the in-by pastures, which are already there, but the key here is to get rid of this bracken, look, as you look all the way along there.
Yeah.
The plan would be to put a fence in below the road, all the way along the north side of the island, practically as far as Gomatra, possibly divide it into a couple of big blocks. deal with the
bracken. How are you going to do it? You going to spray it?
We'll have to spray it. How? Helicopter.
Helicopter, that's not cheap.
It's the only way to tackle that sort of area of such difficult topography. If it was all flat and accessible by tractor, then you could think of possibly mowing it or something, or swiping it, but it's just so gnarly, the landscape here, that that's really the only way to do it. Yeah. We'd have, obviously, exclusion zones for the spraying, you know, right down the burn sides and things like that. And botanists have been on the island last week, they've been on a few times, they were here last week, and they're coming again in August, going round looking at the vegetation classification and the habitat mapping of the island. And if they come up with some particular hotspots of something fancy, then we could easily include those in an exclusion zone for the spraying too.
It must be actually quite exciting for you lot. Because it's like being given a blank canvas, a rather beautiful blank canvas.
It's amazing. We keep pinching ourselves, I think. You know, it really is an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, well, one part of the ecology that we haven't spoken about is human. Mm-hmm. You know, because I mean, if you're going to have another 45 people on this island, how do you pick them? Who shall have this portion?
I don't want to be on that committee. We had a survey carried out, and we had 500 detailed responses to the survey, which equates to about maybe 1,500 people in all, saying that they would love to come and live on Ulva, and this is what they proposed to do. It wasn't an application process, it was to assess the demand. And boy, is the demand there. And these were people from all over the world, actually. A fair few from Scotland, a fair few from Mull, but internationally, you know, which is terrific.
But if you built houses here, how do you prevent them? Well, say somebody gets a plot of land here and is able to build their own house. How do you prevent them in the future selling it and it becoming a holiday home? You know, the island being hollowed out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because one of the first things that happened when to change sort of tenure and title law and stuff like that a good few years ago was the abolition of the feudal setup, you know, with the preemptive right of the feudal landlord, which was a good thing. But in a funny way, the powers that they then gave to rural housing bodies, registered rural housing bodies, and we are one of those, are actually more flexible and more powerful than the old feudal system. So we can write into the title pretty much anything we want. So there would be burdens in the title to any sale, any freehold of land sort of thing, which said things, for example, like you have to live in that house for so many months of the year. You can't sell it on. If you do sell it on, we could have the preemptive right to buy it back at a price which is predictable, and things like that. Yeah. The detail of all those things still needs to be worked out, but we're absolutely determined that all housing on the island will stay always for community benefit in the broadest sense. That's not to say that people won't be encouraged to come and build their own house on a plot and get a reasonable rate of return at the end of the day, you know. But it needs to be predictable and fair, you know. But it's all perfectly doable, and we're on with that.
John Addy there, director of the North West Mull Community Woodlands Company.
I'm Colin Morrison, and I'm the chairman of North West Mull Community Woodland Company, who purchased Ulva for the community.
Your day job is basically taking trips out on Tourist Mara. I've been out on a couple of trips with you, and it's a beautiful part of the world. That's fantastic. Lots to see, lots to enjoy. Are you noticing a difference, even just a year on?
Yeah, there's loads going on over there. Obviously, there's more visitors going over there without a doubt. But right from the start, you know, there were we had volunteers getting involved with stuff like the garden, for instance. So right at the beginning, immediately the community got more engaged and got involved. But some of the stuff's a bit longer term as well. But we've managed to fix the piers. And there is work behind the scenes, but it's great getting involved with, Ruri and Rebecca, for instance, who live over there, and they've been right in the middle of getting on with what we're trying to do.
I'm smiling there because, I mean, you say a phrase like, we've fixed the piers. Mm-hmm. Quickly said, not quickly done, I guarantee.
No, it wasn't. I mean, we're fortunate to get a grant from Marine Scotland to do that. But yeah, obviously there's work in all of that to get it to actually happen and just to make it happen. So, yeah. No, we've had that and just there's 100 different things going on kind of behind the scenes. So yeah, it's a long-term project. But yeah, we're seeing stuff on the ground for sure as well.
What is it about the fact that it is a community project that makes people want to volunteer, that makes people want to help and put their hands in their pockets occasionally?
Yeah, definitely putting their hands in their pockets too. It's been brilliant, the amount of support we've had. I think folk feel it's their project here, you know, so they can see that they can become engaged, they can choose to be part of it. And as part of the wider community of North West Mull, you know, although it's a short stretch of water here, so although it's an island apart, an island separate, it's very much part of the wider community. And once people realise that and they realise it's theirs, they've got engaged for sure. It's been great.
Who's going to get the unenviable job of actually picking the folk to go and live on that island?
I'm not going to have
any, everyone I've spoken to so far has said somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, there will be a transparent process. There has to be a policy and a process, and it will be all above board, and that will be well laid out so everyone can see it ahead of the game, and I won't be making the decisions, I assure you of that. It'll have to be something that everyone's happy with.
What kind of folk are you looking for to move across there?
There'll be various different folk that will be the right people for over there, I would say. But again, as you're probably aware, we had over 500 people answer the survey. So there's a lot of different skills, and it's not just builders or electricians or whatever. There's people that will be able to live over there and maybe work on the mainland of Mull, or even, you know, it's about getting a balance in the community, I think. So it's quite difficult to say who exactly will be there. Again, that's what working up the policy is about, to make sure, or the policies is about, to make sure that it works well for the community going forward.
Must be quite exciting, though, because, I mean, essentially you've got a clean slate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot, I mean, just driving about, walking about on there, I see lots of potential. I see lots of things you could do.
Absolutely. There's huge tourism potential. There's tons of opportunities for that, for people to be running, you know, ranger type stuff, trips. There's huge scope, as you can see as you wander about.
Colin Morrison of Tourist Mara. Plans for the future. Have you any idea how many people you want to attract to this island? What kind of time frame?
Our initial plan we were looking at within 10 to 20 years would be 50 people, which we think is a manageable amount, because when my husband really grew up here, there were over 30 of them, you know, and that was only 20 years ago. So we'd be looking at a mixture of those numbers coming from the renovating the existing houses and then looking at new builds. We do want to have new houses. We want to get manageable numbers back living here.
How do you pick who actually gets onto the island?
That's something that's really difficult. We're going to have an allocation policy drawn up. But because of the mixture of properties we have, it's not just going to be families or couples or single people. You know, we're going to be looking for a mix. Because I think there's the opportunity for people to live here and work on Mull, or a lot of the fishermen who, well, basically all the fishermen who work out of Alva Ferry and Alva come in from elsewhere, same with the fish farm. We've got excellent 4G network now here, so that offers the opportunity for people who want to work from home. You know, it's not going to be easy, so I think once it comes down to actually applying for housing, I think the numbers won't be as high when people are maybe faced with the reality of what it would be like to live on an island. But I think it's also, it's an ideal opportunity for people. I mean, I was 19 when I moved here, and people must have thought, that's bit strange, but I love it, and I don't want to live anywhere else. And I think for families it's a great place to bring up children. I think for young couples as well, it offers an opportunity that they maybe wouldn't get elsewhere. So it'll definitely be tricky allocating houses, but it's a good problem to have. I think, you know, it's not going to just be up to us. There'll be a group of people, and you know, we're not going to get on with everyone, but wherever you live, you're not going to come with anyone, you know. I think it's more important that they're the right people for Alva, and hopefully people who want to stay and help and build the community. It will not be my decision in the end, I hope. But no, it's tricky.
Rebecca Munro, proprietor of the boathouse on the island of Alva. Rebecca and Rory are both young people with a young family. There's a lot of possibilities in front of them. You know, it's quite a large island, a surprisingly large island. It's got a history, yes, and it's got a degree of infrastructure at the moment, but the possibilities are what make it really fascinating to me. They've got a long way to go, but whatever happens, it's going to be an interesting story.